All righty. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Kim, we'll join the conversation live sometime within the next hour, maybe the next few minutes, because we will carry at least parts of the White House press briefing today. It is the end of a remarkable week in Washington, and it ended with the president in many ways issuing a veiled threat today to the ousted FBI director, the guy he fired this morning. So we'll see how all of that shakes out. So we'll stand by. Sean Spicer's briefing coming up a little bit later, but it's Friday, and that's when we talk to Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, where you can see in the Tribune and online. Andrea, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Okay. So, well, let's start with Peapod, because Peapod is moving its headquarters, or all of its workers, downtown. And the idea is, well, I mean, what's the story about? Is this sort of just an example of what's happening overall, these corporations moving into the city center?
Yes, there seem to be more and more doing that, right? There's such a long list we were looking at here with Motorola Solutions, McDonald's, Beam, Kraft. Everybody wants to move downtown. So the latest, this, I'm not sure this was a fully baked announcement yet, but there was an executive from Peapod out and about this week who said they are planning to relocate their headquarters. So they're in Skokie, and they would be moving to downtown Chicago.
Okay, so here's what I learned when I read this story. There are offices in the Civic Opera House?
There are.
I didn't know that.
TechNexus. I don't know if you've heard of TechNexus.
No.
They're located there. They do kind of a collabs between startups and big companies, and there's definitely office space in the Civic Opera House for other things than opera.
See, that's where Peapod has some people now, but that probably won't be where they...
They have some people there now, but they did say they were looking at leases, so it sounds like they're still exploring their options.
Okay, there's that. Tell me about Jamber, because I love this story. Now, this is a McHenry County guy, right? Came up with this idea.
Yeah, so he's from here. He's also now, though, in Nashville, so I think he's kind of splitting his time because the music scene there being a logical place for him to develop out this business. So Jamber is kind of taking this idea of paying artists for gigs and bringing it online.
I love the idea that he and his partner were in Nashville for sort of an entrepreneurial business expo, and they were going to come up with LinkedIn for musicians. Okay, that's been done, different groups, blah, blah, blah. And then they come upon this table filled with checks. And the idea is that the music companies have a hard time sometimes paying their musicians because they move around or they sing under different names. They can't find them. So I think it was 20-50% sometimes of these of payments go unfulfilled. And that's what Jamber is going to do.
Yep. It sounds like lots of checks were going to places where they weren't getting cashed. And now this creates a way that's just a more seamless kind of online platform where artists can sign up, get paid, makes it easier for the companies because then they're not having to chase people down and get return checks and go through all these dramas.
So what is it? Just, I mean, have you seen it personally? Is it just like a spreadsheet on your phone or?
Yeah, I think it just enables basically the payment system, but it takes it out of sort of the PDF world and puts it into the app world.
And someplace, I guess, where you can just log in and see it as soon as it's entered by someone else.
Yep.
All right, so there's that. We'll wish him luck. Speaking of music, George's Music Room. There's a story you guys, Tribune, ran earlier this week about the big changes at Midway Airport today. A lot of new restaurants.
Yep.
And one of the guys that got the axe was George at George's Music Room.
Yeah, George's Music Room, which I feel like this little story is worth reading just for the sake of George's quotes.
This guy is connected.
Yeah, he's like, I'm 70. What am I supposed to do? Move for Uber? Right. Like, I can't shut down. Or go drive for Uber? They can't shut me down.
But he had a tiny little record store in Midway Airport.
In Midway, yes.
That he says Mayor Daley helped him get.
Yep. So he's been out there for a long time. He says 1999, Mayor Richard M. Daley helped him out with that. But now he's going to lose his space. So he made a phone call and landed at Navy Pier. So he's going to be opening out there.
That's the story. I want to know who this guy's calling and what
he's
got.
That's the Chicago way, Steve.
But good for him because apparently he's very popular. African-American-owned business.
Yep.
And so he says that, you know, that gets him great credit, and people look up to him for that. So he'll be at Navy Pier.
Yep.
Well, it's just the unlikeliest thing. So he's going to Navy Pier and selling LPs in a 400-square-foot store.
Yeah, so it's R&B music. He's going to be next to Garrett's Popcorn. It sounds kind of awesome.
All right, so that's George's Music Room. Let's wish him the best as luck as well. Okay, so the weekend is just ahead. Big plans?
It is. I plan to go and just enjoy some nice weather.
You're the content editor, right term, for Red Eye. What's it about this weekend?
Yeah, so Red Eye is looking at the issue of, you know, it's Mother's Day weekend. So Red Eye is looking at parents who take their kids everywhere in Chicago. Kind of the Red Eye, you know, ethos of where you're going to eat, where you're going to drink, where you're going to concerts, and looking at parents who are taking, in some cases, infants out to these places and how that works, and also what the rules are at some of the big sites.
Are we giving them a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
You know, I think we're saying, you know, it's cool, but...
All right, we'll look for that. Andrea Haynes, have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're standing by for the White House press briefing. Sean Spicer will come along. They haven't started yet. Here's the deal. Usually, especially Sean, when they get started, he's got usually a lengthy opening statement that has to do with schedules and all of that. So we won't pick that up. But once the questioning starts in earnest, Kim Gordon will bring us into that. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Good Friday afternoon to you. Looks like a great Mother's Day weekend ahead for us. And we're standing by, as I said earlier, for the White House briefing with Sean Spicer to talk about, well, there's a number of things to address. There's some trade agreements and all of that. But I think the big political story has to do with President Trump and the firing of James Comey and the conflicting stories coming out of it. So we expect Sean Spicer to address those. And well, the warm-up act for Sean Spicer, who could be better than Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be with you. I thought you were going to ask me if I was in D.C., which I am, interviewing for Comey's job. But I didn't qualify for that.
You know what? Maybe Spicer's job. I don't want you with Comey's job.
I don't want Comey's job. I don't want Spicer's job.
Well, let's talk about it. You're in the business of finding jobs and placing people and all of that. And, you know, I went through this a few years ago, and the idea is that, you know, you go through keywords, that you're supposed to have specific words in your letter of introduction or your resume or all of these things in order to get the attention. And the idea is that they're all being scanned. Everything is becoming automated. And, you know, that's troublesome to me or to someone who might be out trying to find a job, because I want to sell myself, not the words I use. How do you address that, and where are we when it comes to automation in the job search?
Well, Steve, it's been going on for a long, long time, whether it's job boards like Career Builder or it's recruiting firms and automated software programs, like they're called ATSs, applicant tracking systems. And so you send your resume in and it scans it for words. And then people got smart and they looked for the words that were on it and or that in the job description, and they'd include those in their resume so they'd be picked up more often by the technology. But it really isn't a detriment from the standpoint of, in the old-fashioned day where you'd mail a resume in or fax a resume in, it still had to sit in a pile or have somebody print it off or whatever the case may be. And now the computer goes through and scans it. So you're still fighting the uphill battle, and the frustrated people are continue to be frustrated. Ironically enough, the technology is making it easier on the companies that are hiring, not on job seekers.
Well, I would imagine, right. So it used to be you would fight and stress over whether you're going to use the ivory linen paper or something
exactly.
Like that.
And, exactly. No, you're 100% correct.
And that's no way to judge a resume either, I guess.
No, it is that same thing. I think I've used the analogy. Is that, you know, 100 years ago, people were afraid that the horse and carriage would be around for forever. And what's the Henry Ford line, right?
If
people would have asked me what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. And I think when you look at this type of situation of what people want, candidates want faster access to jobs. Employers want better people. And what we end up having is a disconnect. And that's called the skills gap that everybody talks about, because it doesn't make a difference what the technology is and what type of resume paper. If you're qualified, companies will find you. If you're not, you're going to be frustrated.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do the people doing the hiring, does technology ever get in the way of the people doing the hiring finding the best candidate?
What technology does is it allows subpar people to do jobs at an average capacity. And what I mean by that is, before technology, and you were just a grinder and you just worked harder than everybody else, people knew what you were producing. Today, you get people who hide behind technology and don't necessarily execute at the same level.
Interesting. All right. So then you're saying thumbs up or thumbs down on these advances first when it comes to job seekers?
It's always a good thing, Steve. I think what people need to figure out is, when they're applying for jobs, is they still need to know how to get their resume in front of the hiring manager as efficiently as they can. And it's hard work. Finding a full-time job is a full-time job.
That's Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. You can follow him on Twitter at LaSalle Gimbel. Where else, Tom?
You can find it at Tom Gimbel at LaSalle Network and LaSalle Network Tom Gimbel, and you can call me whatever you want.
Wait, if I were to follow LaSalle Gimbel, would they give me anything at all?
That's probably what I should have named one of my kids.
No, probably not. All right, we're going to talk about baby names, I think, a little bit later with Suzanne Mushin. Good to talk to you. Have a safe trip back to Chicago. I appreciate it, Tom.
Thanks. Talk to you later, Steve.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. Kim, what's going on at the White House press briefing room? We're still...
Right now, National Security Advisor General McMaster is speaking about the president's trip next week overseas, and he's giving a briefing on that and answering reporters' questions about that. They tried to get him to talk about how national security was being affected due to all these things that have unraveled this
sure.
week, but he said that he would have to refer all of those questions to Sean Spicer, and he will be happy to answer any of them once he's done giving this briefing.
I'm sure Sean Spicer was happy to hear that.
Yes, okay. And Sean is standing just to the left of McMaster, so he is taking this all in.
Once that starts, we'll jump into it. But standing just to our right is Suzanne Mushin. Well, actually, I don't know if she's standing or not. She's on the phone line this afternoon. Suzanne, the co-host of The Big Payoff on WGN. What's going on?
I'm good, Steve. I was planning on being there with you.
I know.
Sitting next to you, holding hands like we usually do.
And we told you that there's really not much need because we didn't know if you were going to be on.
I know. I'm here.
So, that if you were a tree question, but if you were a Dove bottle. The big news this week, Dove skincare or lotion or body gel or whatever, they made a lot of women's body issues and tried to do that fairly well. And this week they came out with, five or six different shaped bottles with the idea that they represented different shaped women, right? Did I get that right?
Well, you got it right. The question is, did they get it right?
And so there's just been an incredible backlash. What were they thinking? I love the one tweet from a woman. She goes, look, I don't need to be reminded that I have a pear-shaped body. I don't want to buy a bottle of shower gel that's shaped like me.
I mean, you just want to be in the room where these decisions get made, don't you? Where the group of people in the agency are sitting around and they say, let's remind women and empower them about their bodies by having these different shaped bottles. And, oh, by the way, let's make some of them really round and pear-shaped. It's just inane. And it's this trend that you and I have touched on from time to time called femvertising is what it's called.
Yeah.
Where with good intentions, and I will say in Dove's case, it is well-intended.
Oh, yeah, I get it. I mean, I get it because they have the commercials with all different shaped women and they've had those campaigns. So it's like, well, why not do the bottle?
Right. Real beauty.
So why not do the bottles?
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. How would you like, let's say it's Axe. I don't really know what your body soap of choice is.
Oh, it's Axe.
I'm so glad to know that.
Yeah.
Would you like to go into the Walgreens and have a whole set of bottles, some with maybe the dad belly, the beer belly, the love handle?
Right.
I mean, is that something that you'd be empowered by?
I really think that this is a great Mother's Day experiment. The husband should go out.
Exactly, right.
Bring their wives home, match the wives to the bottle. I just think that would be a disaster.
A disaster.
Okay, here's how they fix it. Well, go ahead.
Yes. So I was just going to say, well-intended, bad decision.
Right. But they're not kind of backing down, right? How could they back down now?
No, they've got the bottles on the shelves.
Here's what I would have done, and although this probably isn't practical either, they should have done them with it as a display. Had the display of every different body shape of Dove shower gel, and then sold just one bottle. Sold the regular bottle, right?
I could not disagree. Well, what would
you could not disagree more?
I couldn't disagree more because I think the whole point here is women don't need to be reminded that people are paying attention to their body shape.
Well, wait a minute, though, because the Real Beauty campaign certainly did that, right?
But the Real Beauty campaign was actual women in real life. This is taking what should have been an empowering message and turning it into something that feels a bit judgmental.
I think if you did the display with all the different types, you could say, look, Dove shower gel works for every different sort of bottle shape, but then only sold the traditional one.
Maybe you're in the wrong business.
Maybe I am. I've been asking myself for 32 years.
You did ask me last night, what if you were one of the shape bottles, what would you be?
What would I be?
Well, you didn't want my input. I asked if you wanted me to weigh in. You said I did. No.
You know, in thinking about it, I still don't. Okay, so let's move on. I love the story. The Social Security Administration comes out, you know, with a list of baby names every year.
Yes.
And the four biggest droppers this year are all different versions of the name Caitlin. So if you took a look at the number of names that dropped the most in the top 1,000 for girls, they're all different spellings. And God knows, I didn't know there were four different spellings for Caitlin, but I guess there are. And they all dropped.
They got
It's got to be related to Bruce Jenner, right? Or to Caitlyn Jenner.
They're claiming that they can't correlate that. But what this list tends to reflect is the cultural context, right? And the only cultural context that could possibly lead to a connection with the name Caitlyn is Caitlyn Jenner. You know, if you go rewind the tape all the way back, I used to laugh because I had a relative who we used to call Uncle A.
Yeah.
I never even asked what his name was. It didn't occur to me. Well, his name was Adolf. Clearly, there is a name that's gone out of fashion, right? And for someone to say, oh, it had nothing to do with Adolf Hitler, and I'm not comparing Caitlyn Jenner. Let's just be clear. I'm saying the trend typically reflects a cultural
norm. Well, one of the experts in the story I read said, look, parents, whether it's good or bad, they don't want their kids associated with a controversial name. And there's just that. But here's what jumped out at me for this article. Okay, they said names have always been biblical, you know, and that's true.
Yeah.
But it's switched in recent decades from New Testament to Old Testament.
Exactly. Lots of Noahs.
Lots of Emmas.
Right?
I mean, my kids were the first. But yeah, Emma and Noah
Jacobs,
are again are the number one
Jacobs.
And two.
Lots of Jakes and Jacobs. Yep.
I wanted to find the there was a number for I don't remember where it is now.
Here's what I'd like us to reflect on a year from now when this report comes up again.
Right.
Has the name Kellyanne made
gone up or down?
Gone up or down?
Or Donald, although Donald's pretty rare. You know, we're waiting for Spicer, and I want to get to this because here's the most amazing thing to me. So Noah is and by the way, my son Noah is in the car right now coming up I-65, coming home from college with Sharon. I just texted him, asked him how he's liked the show so far, and I don't think he's aware I do a show. So Noah's the number one name, right, for boys this year, as it has been for the past years. But here's the thing. We're naming our kids many different names now, so that 50 years ago, there were many fewer names that we were choosing for our kids. So in 1966, the number one name for a boy was Michael. There were 80,000 boys named Michael in 1966, born that year. Last year, Noah was the number one baby's name, and only 19,000 boys have that name.
It's similar to, you know, back when we were growing up, there was ABC, NBC, CBS, right? You didn't have 1,000 channels. I also think that people pride themselves these days in being creative.
I think our culture
is allowed for that.
I went to a school with a kid named WFLD, which was weird.